It's The Takeaway. Welcome back. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. Since 9/11, the U.S. has prosecuted exactly 807 people for terrorism. The latest was just last month, on July 10th. It was the case of a U.S. Army sergeant in Hawaii who was caught in a sting operation by the FBI. Then there's the case of Ali Sharif Dimash, who was the first foreigner brought to the United States to face terrorism charges under the Trump administration. That was 2 weeks ago. The Intercept is tracking all of these cases through their new project. It's called Trial and Terror. Trevor Aronson is the co-creator of the project and a contributing writer at The Intercept. He joins me now. Trevor, welcome.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, 807 people in total prosecuted, as I mentioned. Break down for us some of the numbers of who they are, what the government says they've actually done, and how long they go to prison for, if at all.
Yeah, so of the 807, 298 have been involved in sting operations. And in those cases, the vast majority of defendants had no direct connections to international terrorist groups. These were people who got involved in plots where an FBI informant or an FBI undercover agent, you know, provided the means and the opportunity, in many cases providing the weapon, in other cases even providing the idea for an attack. In these cases, these are not examples necessarily of people who would have gotten involved in attacks on their own, but thanks to the government's intervention, thanks to the government's encouragement, got involved in attacks. And what's interesting about material support is that at its heart, in its truest meaning, what it's intended to do is prosecute someone who provided some sort of assistance to a real terrorist. So he, you know, helped a terrorist, for example, drive across the country or across the city to deliver a bomb, or he provided materials for a terrorist to make a bomb. And in its truest sense, that is what a material support prosecution would involve. But today what we're seeing is that because of the interpretations in the court of material support, people who aren't even really connected to real terrorists are being charged with material support, because what the courts have upheld is that believing that you are helping a terrorist is enough to be charged with material support and convicted for material support, even if you aren't actually aiding a real terrorist. And by that, what I mean is through these sting operations, the FBI uses informants or undercover agents who pose as ISIS members or Al-Qaeda members, and they get people in the United States to somehow provide them with some sort of support. And so even though they are essentially helping an undercover FBI agent, because they think they are helping a real terrorist, they are then prosecuted for material support. It's a vague type of charge that allows the U.S. Department of Justice a very wide latitude in prosecuting individuals.
So material support can become this legal catch-all that interacts with this phenomenon of the sting operations. You mentioned about a third of the 807 cases you tracked were stings. In many cases, Trevor, as you mentioned, these are cases where the eventual defendants were never really in a position to commit violence. Sometimes they call these stage-managed operations with FBI undercover agents or other types of law enforcement. A lot of people might look at that, though, and say, isn't that exactly how you want it? If people think they're terrorists or think they're helping terrorists, even if they're not, isn't keeping them contained in some legal stage show and keeping them away from people with violence exactly what the average American would want?
And that's what the FBI would say, certainly. And the FBI would say that there are two benefits to this type of preemptive prosecution. And one benefit is that this is the type of person who maybe one day would really come across a real terrorist, and that real terrorist would provide them with the means to do some sort of terrible harm. And so this sting operation is getting that person off the street before that can happen. And then the second benefit is that, in the FBI's view, this creates a hostile environment for terrorism. So that, you know, if a real terrorist is out in the United States and is trying to conspire with other people, they will begin to think, well, hey, is this guy I'm talking to an FBI informant or undercover agent? And that will then undercut maybe some momentum they might get in trying to put together a plot. And those are valid. Those are valid arguments. I'm not going to say that they're not. But what I would raise is that there is a clear track record of the FBI being very good at finding these people who are at the earliest stages of wanting to get involved in terrorism. You know, they don't have connections to terrorists. They don't have weapons. And in some cases, they are mentally ill or they are financially desperate, and an FBI informant provides them with an incentive, such as money, to get involved in a plot. The question is whether they would have gone forward in any sort of plot had they met a real terrorist. And then the other point I would raise is that while the FBI has gotten very good at catching these guys who are this low-hanging fruit, the people who can be brought up in these sting operations, none of these sting operations have actually caught someone who was on the verge of an attack. They've never caught someone who had bombs or had weapons and had an actual plan. And, you know, just before he's able to move forward in that plan, is arrested by the FBI thanks to the sting operation. And so I think there is a question of whether the FBI is dedicating a lot of resources to people who are only capable of terrorism through these FBI sting operations, while at the same time missing the truly dangerous threats that, you know, to the FBI's credit, are very difficult to find, but might not be as difficult to find if so many resources weren't spent on these very questionable cases.
Well, one interesting related fact to that, Trevor Aronson, that you found is that about half of these 807 people who face charges have eventually been released with no supervision at all, which suggests the government doesn't really consider them dangerous.
Absolutely. You know, this was one of the reasons that we started to move forward in this project, was that we were looking at these terrorism prosecutions and realizing that half of them have resulted in defendants who have since been released. And I think it's an easy assumption to make by the average American that hey, these terrorism prosecutions are really serious, so they must involve people going to jail for decades, if not life in prison. While the truth is that the vast majority of defendants post 9/11 international terrorism cases have been sentenced to relatively minor sentences, you know, 6 years in some cases, a decade in prison. And we're now getting to this point in history where so many of these people are now being released. And in some cases, these will be people who were released for doing fairly minor things, such as maybe lying to an FBI agent. But in other cases, there are people who were involved in plots that the government described as deadly serious who have been released. An example is a group of men in Miami in 2006 that became known as the Liberty City Seven. They conspired with an FBI informant in a plot where they were allegedly going to, you know, place a bomb at the Sears Tower in Chicago, as well as bomb the North Miami FBI office. And, you know, fast forward to 2017, you know, all but one of those people has now been released. The last person will be released later this year. There is no government program to monitor them. And so the question is, if these guys were so dangerous in 2006 and they were described as terrorists who wanted to declare a ground war on the United States, how is it okay then for them to be released without any sort of supervision? I mean, does that suggest that after a short prison sentence, a terrorist is fully rehabilitated? Or I think more concerning, does it suggest that maybe these guys weren't really that dangerous in the first place?
Trevor Aronson is the co-creator of Trial and Terror, appearing in The Intercept. He's executive director of the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting. Trevor Aronson, thank you.
Thanks, Todd.